hate that question.
You're
That's
welcome.
Awful. It's like, which one of your fingers would you like to cut off?
Hi, I'm Lizzie Flux.
And I'm Ben McKenzie.
And this is kind of Pratt Chat.
Yeah, but more the Ook Club.
Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for being our subscribers. We hope you enjoyed the first episode.
And we hope you know that we appreciate you.
Yeah, and there's more of you now, which is very nice. So we hope you're all enjoying this. We thought we'd do something a little bit similar to last time, but with a bit of a different vein.
Yeah, and I expect to like feel feelings. Last time it made me feel a bit unaccomplished, even though we got a passing grade in the quiz. But this time, do you want to say what we're going to be doing?
Oh, we are going to do a Which Discworld Character Are You quiz.
And we'll be sharing the link so you can do it as well. We went through a very strict selection process, which was what's the first thing that comes up on Google when you Google which Discworld character are you quiz.
Yeah, so you'll probably find it yourself if you Google for it, but we'll provide the link to make sure you get the same one.
But who knows, like search engine optimization can just move things around.
Oh, that's true. It's sort of weird. I've never seen this website before, so I'm kind of...
Yeah, we've probably all got viruses now, so like if we get viruses in between that, we will tell you not to do it. But no, I just think it's just old. Like I think it's...
Yeah, I'm not even quite sure how you give the answers, to be honest.
Oh, wait, that's a good point. I didn't notice that. I'm going to find a different one.
Oh, no. It does work. It does work.
Okay.
All right. Phew.
All right. I was like, oh, no.
We haven't fallen at the first hurdle. We're going to do this. Are we going to read the questions out as we go?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
We can do it quickly. It's 10 questions.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
How would you describe yourself? I'm powerful. I'm smart. I'm just ... normal. I'm a control freak. So powerful and normal had an exclamation mark. We don't have to say how we responded. We could just...
Yeah, no, I think out of those, I know which one I'm going to pick. Okay, I've answered that one. Question number two. Which trait would you like to have? Bravery, power, calmness, or confidence?
All right. Ooh. Does it mean like you automatically lose all the other traits if you... No.
No, I don't know. They never give you that much context.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying that all the photos of this are just sort of random pictures of
there's a guitar and things. Yeah. All right. Question three. Which ability would you like to have? An ability to fly, an ability to see everything, an ability to know everything, an ability to be invisible. That was easy.
Okay.
For me.
Okay. Yep. Gotcha. Question number four.
Same picture where people are just on the edge of a cliff?
Yeah.
Because, weird. I mean, I feel like it ties to the question.
I think it comes with stock images. Okay, look, this one, question four. How are you around other people? I love to be around people. Fine, but I like my own circle of friends. Good, but people think I'm odd. Or I'm shy and almost invisible.
I think B and C the same.
No. No, I don't think they are. That says as much about us as the answer we picked, perhaps. Hang on, I'm stuck for this. Finding this one really hard to answer because I feel like it doesn't have the answer that I really want to give.
Well, you're gonna hate question five.
No, no. Okay, I'm gonna. Oh. It's too hard to answer.
Do you want me to leave the room so that you're by yourself to answer this?
Or? No, it's fine. That's cheeky.
Yes.
All right. No, I'm going to... All right. That's not really quite the answer I want, but that's okay.
It's not a perfect every option. All
it's
right.
It's fine. Question five.
Do you think you're better than some people? No, I don't think that at all. No, I think everyone has their own good and bad sides, even me. Well, kind of. I know my qualities. Yes, some people need to learn their own place. This is a stupid question. I'm sorry if you wrote this quiz, but this... you can't rank people. And also, like, it's not like a ladder.
Yeah. Well, some people do think that way, though.
I guess what I'm saying is I am better than some people. And that option is not there.
You're
but
better
like,
than people who rank other people.
But it's not because some people need to learn their place.
Fair.
Yeah.
Okay. Question number six. What would you do if someone made fun of you? I'd ignore them. I know my values. I'd show them two strong reasons why they should bother me, if you know what I mean. I think that means why they shouldn't bother you. I'd say nothing. If I stand up for myself, the mocking would only get worse. Or I'd stay quiet, but when the clock strikes, I'd let them have a piece of my own mind. When the clock strikes.
I feel like that's going to be like a specific reference.
That is a specific reference. It's too specific for me. I don't know what it is. Hang on. No, that's from... I think that's in Witches Abroad. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Anyway. What's your idea of fun? Staying home and watching TV alone, hanging out at the mall with my friends, going out to a club, reading a nice book.
What if I like all of those things?
We've never hung out at a mall. Are we not friends?
Well, we don't really have malls.
What kind of club is it? Like a doof, 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 or like a book club?
Or like a, you know, a fancy
I'll let you smoke cigars
posh
and
club.
Sit on a leather chair near a fireplace.
I did go to one of those recently, although it was technically a bookshop, but it felt like one of those.
Yeah. I mean, that's the ideal combination of things, isn't it?
Yeah. They had a cool bit where there were all these banned books and they had them in this bit in the corner that was like behind an iron gate that was locked up.
Oh, isn't like they're still banned?
Well, I don't know about that. They were banned and rare books. There are a couple that were banned, possibly not banned in Australia. I don't know.
Mm.
Oh, this is hard.
I'm going to say this doesn't feel very Pratchett-y.
Well, that's the point, right?
I know,
like,
yeah.
It's meant to, yeah.
You can't just like fudge your way through.
It's okay. I found another one we can try if we want. Anyway, right. Here we go. How would you tell someone he or she is wrong? I just needed to put they. Mm. Anyway, I'll try to explain to them. And if that doesn't work, I'd have to get extreme. I wouldn't because no one listens to me.
Mm.
I'll try and stay calm and explain why they are wrong. If nothing happens, I'll give up on it. I'd state out facts why they're wrong. It's science.
It doesn't quite have the option I'd use, but so I'll go for whatever.
What are they wrong about? Like, I feel like the tack you'd take is different depending on what they're wrong about.
Let's say it's something that they're unambiguously wrong, and if they continue on the stream that they're on, it could cause harm.
Okay.
Let's go with that definition of wrong. All I know right. that won't affect the quiz answers, but I think just so we're on the same page with answering.
Okay, that sounds fair. That sounds fair.
Like that, it's worth correcting them for.
Okay, sure. All right, so we're up to question 9.
All right. How would you react if you see a police officer beating someone? I'd defend that poor person. Violence is not a solution. I'm sure that person deserves the beating. I'd walk away. It's none of my business. I'd step up to see what's the problem. If someone's been bad, then it's okay. Can I just quickly say that I'm getting like horrible flashbacks to when I had my job interview at McDonald's?
Oh, no.
Because they give you like scenario questions. Like, how would you handle this scenario?
Is it like the Voight-Kampff test? Do they ask you if you see a tortoise in the desert, it's on its back, but you're not helping it. Why not?
Yeah. And then you have to run away in a raincoat, but then like someone shoots you and then it's the tears in the rain. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But no, and they sort of go, oh, a customer comes in and they complain about – this was like 15 years ago, by the way, so it might have changed by then, and also McDonald's was a great workplace, blah, 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 blah. But they're like, oh, okay, if a customer comes in and their order is wrong and they start yelling at you, what do? A, yell back. You can't like let them get away with that. B, calmly ask them what the problem is and do your best to solve the thing. C, cry. Like it was like that level. Yeah, so it's – yeah.
I gotcha. Okay.
All right.
All right. Last question. Question 10. Would you ever hide a secret from your best friend? And the answer options are, if a secret doesn't involve my friend, I'd stay quiet. Oh, I'm full of secrets. The less they know, the better. Or I wouldn't hide anything big.
I mean, there's a lot of chasms between those answers.
There are.
I've answered and I have gotten a result.
Okay. All right, I've answered as well. I've also got a result.
And I'm disappointed in the way it's because I didn't get a specific character. I got a category of character.
Yeah, me also. What did you get? Do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I can go first.
Okay.
You're a wizard.
Well, I'm a wizard too.
Oh, we're very smart. But we need to focus our brilliance.
With some training, we could accomplish great things. I don't know how I feel about this result.
I don't feel like I am a wizard.
I mean, I think I would be a wizard if I was on the Discworld.
I guess if we were like really there.
But I don't...
It's not what I was expecting.
I have found another one.
Okay.
But this is also not a specific character quiz.
Mm.
And it only has 8 questions. This one's called What Would You Be on the Discworld?
Yeah, let's keep it going.
You might find a link. If you look at the bottom... I found it linked from the one we just did, but I think it's written by somebody else.
And I feel like having just done the episode we just did, like Equal Rides, yeah, I feel like... good being a wizard.
Yeah, like not too the bad in that book.
I don't know.
I've just sent you a link one.
Doing a hecking click on it. Why is there not like a comprehensive? I'm just so surprised. It's like,
sorry, I can't believe this.
I can find out what Babysitter's Club character I am. Should we do that?
I don't know. It seems a bit, I don't know if it's right for our audience. I mean, some people in our audience, I'm sure, would love to know that. Let's try this 8.
All right.
Question 1. We'll see how it goes. It'll be quick. We'll go through it real quick.
Okay. Start.
What do you do in your spare time? Help the local people, play with your toys and make other people's lives miserable, eat, and apart from that, pretend you're doing something useful, watch hourglasses, go around hitting people and asking for their money, doesn't matter who they are. Now, I feel like this is one of those quizzes you can game it to the answer that you want.
Who's the one that plays with toys and makes other people's lives miserable?
I don't know. I don't know which one of these things. I don't do any of these things. I guess that I kind of do that one. All right. Okay. Question two.
All right.
This one might be terrible and we can just forget about it.
That's okay. Still fun. What do you like to wear? Doesn't matter as no one really cares. A large pointy hat and overly embroidered robes. A hat and clothes that you've had for a while. Clothes I probably haven't ever washed. I like my black and I like to keep my bones covered.
A bit of a leading question there.
I mean, I do like to keep my bones covered.
Well, me too. I feel like I don't have to work hard for that, though.
Yeah. All right. Question three.
What animals do you like? Cats. I take them all for granted. As long as you can eat them, they're good. The ones that don't kill you, all of them come into use. What do you mean all of them come into use? That's weird.
Everything has a porpoise. All right, this is going to be... it doesn't reflect my personality, but yeah.
Okay, all right.
What do you wash in? An old and rotting bathtub? The rain. I don't wash. A grand bath and don't forget the bubbles. Me washing would be a bad idea. What's wrong with death washing?
I don't think that one's death.
Also,
none of these really... I'm going to go with the one that's closest to... Anyway, this is a terrible quiz. All right.
But it's fun. I'm enjoying trying to see how my personality fits around it.
Okay. Where would you live? Away from people spying, yet close enough to spy on them. Well, a grand building with others of my kind. Up a huge tower. In a big house where nobody can see me. On my own. Far from anyone else. I don't want to live in any of those places.
You have to, Ben. You have to. And at the end of this quiz, they'll take you there.
All right. Well, I'm picking one that I like the most.
Is it an old and rotting bath? No, that was the previous question.
Okay. Question number six.
Can you imagine
six.
If you wanted to wash in an old and rotting bathtub but live in your grand house?
Oh, that would be horrendous.
Right. All right. Okay. How do you get to the top? Yep. Well, I'm already the best at what I do already. That was my mess up there. I don't need to. I never will, but that doesn't matter. Money... By the unfortunate event of someone higher than me suddenly falling to sleep permanently.
That is a weird euphemism.
I mean...
Okay, well, I've given an answer.
But there isn't a good one. No. All right.
Okay, question seven. How would you describe yourself? Brave? Selfish? Kind? Not particularly liked by other people? A very nice person? Brackets. This is a lie. What's the last one?
Question eight. What do you most value? Other people, your urge to eat, your weapons, nothing, me. Can I just quickly read this as a poem? What do you most value? Other people, your urge to eat, your weapons, nothing, me.
Okay. Well, you did it.
Yeah.
I've given my answers. I got a different answer for this one.
Ooh, let's see. I got wizard.
I did not.
What did you get?
I got witch. And a picture of a dude wearing a witch's hat. Oh, no, I didn't get that.
I don't know. So that's... Well, we sure have done some quizzes.
We sure have. I did find one other one, but okay. I think it might be the same. No, it's the same one we already did.
All right. But I mean, I guess now I'm definitely a wizard.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm feeling a bit I was expecting to be am I going to be
How do we even discuss this, Liz? I feel like this is terrible.
Okay, let's flip this around. Mm. If you had to choose a character for yourself to be, as in one that you think you could fit into their life easily, who would you pick? So not necessarily an aspirational one that you're like, that seems like where I'd be.
That I could slot in there. That's
but like happily.
Question. Well, probably. Oh. Well, I mean, I'm not a good enough actor to replace Tom John. But if they lowered their standards,
come
that's
on,
where I would
be,
feel happy.
Be nice. But as in he's supposed to be the best
actor. No, he's supposed to be the best actor of all time. Yeah. I'm not there, but I could have a crack at that, so I could work in the disc, or or maybe, I mean, it's hard not to say ponder Stibbins, like to be the person figuring things out and trying to explain them to people who don't actually care to know them. That feels like a role I've been in before.
But where do you think he bathed? No,
I don't know. I also quite like Susan Stoehelet's attitude towards working with kids. Mm. And I do work with kids in my day job. So that's another one, I guess, if we're looking for a specific character. Otherwise, I feel like I'd be just like a minor.
A specific character.
I'd like just a watchman of some sort.
Those three suit you quite well.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, those are probably the specific ones. How about you?
It's hard for me to think of specific, I feel like perhaps, and I've forgotten her name and I always forget her name, but the one who's now dead, Magrat's mentor, the one like the research witch.
Yeah,
I feel like
Goody Wimper.
Goody Wimper, yeah, because I feel like, you know, she went around learning things, like doing research, like seeing things for herself. And
writing it down.
Yeah, so that's kind of like what I do in my work to a degree. Like, not exactly the same, but I feel like that's somewhere I could adapt my skills and my lifestyle to.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I like where she lives, but she clearly goes to other places as well. So that's quite the thing.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's the one that most net. Or William de Word, I could probably get involved in the newspaper.
Yeah. Would you want to be him, though?
No, I'd want to work for him or within that industry, I think.
Would you want to be an investigative journalist, or would you want to be writing reviews and opinion pieces, kind of the sort of thing that you write now?
Opinions and pieces, so, yeah.
Interviews, yeah.
But, I mean, if I want to be a bit more adventurous, I could be that journalist that accompanies that Van Oslo.
Saccharissa Cripslock?
Yeah, but she's more like, let's get us a scoop.
Yeah, that's true. She's onto it. She's adventurous.
Yeah, so it's not really my vibe.
Mm.
So, yeah, I feel like those are, like, the places I could.
Good choices.
Yeah.
Good choices.
Yeah.
All right. No, I like that. I like that. I think I could fit in there. I thought about what question I could ask you just in general. And I kind of just want to know what other things you're reading at the moment, because we don't really talk about non-Pratchett books on the main podcast. Mm. But is there anything you've read? And this could be like any time in the recent years that you think people who like Terry Pratchett would enjoy?
Ooh, this is a tricky one. Let me just open my spreadsheet of books.
Yes, because Liz, of course, does have a spreadsheet of books. I don't know that we've talked about this.
Yeah, so I, for the last 3 or 4 years, have each year started up a new spreadsheet to keep track of what books I've been reading. So I have a really good record of what I've taken.
That's very useful.
And every year I add like another category of like things to classify them by, so like what I'm reading them for, when I started, when I finished, that kind of thing. Whereas, so,
you know, I'm a pleb and I use Goodreads.
I also use Goodreads as well, but I don't put everything on Goodreads.
No, I do, but I don't get to read as much.
Mm. I'm not sure like what there's good overlap with. I really enjoyed The Memory Police by Yoko Ogawa. So that is, it's been out for a while, but the translation only came out this year in English, and it's set on this unnamed island where it's just normal for things to disappear. So like people will wake up one day and birds will be gone, and it doesn't mean they're physically gone. It means that you can't quite remember what they are. There's no purpose for them anymore, and they'll eventually leave, and you'll forget sort of what the sense of it is. Or like one day, like a certain type of flower will be gone, and everyone who has that flower will come and get rid of it. Like they'll tear them up out of their garden and get rid of it, and then over time people will forget how it smelled, what it meant, why it was important. Except there's a small group of people they realize that aren't forgetting, so that's where the memory police come in. And you don't get a lot of answers, but it's a really good, gentle paced book that raises a lot of questions, and it has like a spooky vibe.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, I really liked it.
Yeah, I would like that. What's it called again?
So it's called The Memory Police. It's by Yoko Ogawa.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in terms of overlapping interests, that one's probably the closest recently.
That's cool. And did that come out recently?
So the translation came out this year.
This year. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
And also another one that I've enjoyed that I read last year, Flames by Robbie Arnott, an Australian author. And that one's got it's broken into different perspectives, and it – everything is spoilers, basically. It's just, it's worth a read.
Okay.
But yeah. It's,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that first one, that Memory Police, reminds me a little bit of Shades of Grey by Jasper Ford.
Oh, yeah. I love that. But write the sequel.
Yeah, I know.
You wrote that whole early riser. It's like a million pages long, which I love and I don't regret. Yeah, I'm glad to have it. Thank you, Jasper Ford.
Okay.
But thank you, Jasper Ford, also for always coming to Melbourne when I'm not available. I'd drop pretty much anything for it, but he always comes like when I've just gone back home to Adelaide or when I have like an unmovable meeting. And he, every time in the last like 5 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Maybe we should find out if he likes Terry Pratchett.
Yeah.
Invite him on the podcast.
Yeah. And then he'll be like, I'm only available if Elizabeth is not there. Like,
No, I'm not doing it without
what
him.
What did I do?
No Pratchett for you. but Shades of Grey, for if you haven't read it, listeners, is this weird sort of speculative fiction book set in this sort of, so is it future? It's kind of a retro future, isn't it? It's not really futuristic from our sort of perspective.
It's almost just like a parallel now, but not quite. Like maybe like, I always thought of it almost a bit like the 80s.
Yeah, me too, actually, which is probably means it's intentional.
Yeah.
But it's in a world where human beings have lost the ability to discern color or natural color, and they can only see this weird artificial color that they're able to create through some strange scientific process. But there's some sort of conspiracy around this. And I don't want to say any more because it's quite a weird book.
It also
goes to some weird places.
And it also like looks at class and ranking and stuff because it's based on what colors you can see.
Yeah, that's right. Because it's not like nobody can see any color. It's like most people can't see any color at all. They just see in shades of gray, hence the title. And it did come out before the other shades of gray, we should say. But some people can see certain ranges of color in the spectrum. And they are afforded a different social status depending on how much they can see and which colors they can see.
Mm.
Yeah, which is very interesting. And that controls all sorts of things like what kind of job they can get.
What table you can sit at in a restaurant, like where, sorts of things.
And the rich can afford to go to places where there's lots of these artificial colors where they saturate things and make them look, but they don't look natural. So like they make a lawn look green, but it's like a weird green, like in Microsoft Paint kind of green is how I imagined it a bit.
One of them has a really great cover where it's like a color in picture where some of the, and it's all like shapes, it's broken into shapes and most of it is white, but some are filled in and it's
that's cool.
Yeah. I have one and I lent it to someone and I'm pretty sure she'll give it back. It was 7 years ago, but it's okay.
Yeah.
I know where she lives. I don't know where she lives, but I've still got a copy.
I've got a copy. I think I've got an early hardcover. I got from a Remainder bookstore.
I want one of the early hardcovers of Early Riser because they've got a die cut thing in the hardcover so that when you open, there's a hole and I tried to get one and it was too late.
Oh, I don't know that one.
I have a question for you, Ben.
Oh, yes. Ask away.
So you like Doctor Who, right?
I do.
If you had to completely remove three of them from having ever been in the series, like all their episodes will disappear.
Oh.
It's all gone.
Oh.
If you had to choose three doctors to remove completely.
That is a horrible question, but also a fascinating question. Three whole doctors.
That's why I chose three, not just one.
Because
can't remember the one you like enjoyed slightly the least.
No, I can't, but I like them all.
I know, that's why it's three.
So I have to make questions. I have to make, okay, my answers are not about the doctors themselves.
No, and it's about, you have to consider the richness of the remaining series.
Yeah. So
plot holes will fill themselves in, so don't worry about continuity.
Okay, all right. Look, all right, this is going to seem mean, and I want to preface it by saying I absolutely loved him, and I feel like people skip over him all the time, and it's a real shame. But he also had one of the shortest runs, and so you lose the least. So I would say Christopher Eccleston, the Ninth Doctor, who I really like, but you only lose 13 episodes, and most of them are great, but not all of them, so that's okay.
Oh, but you lose the Big Brother one.
I know, you would lose the Big Brother. That's not my favourite one.
But it's just such a blunt commentary on reality television.
It is. I mean, and look, that season has dated, which was intentional. Like, it feels very much product of its era. Who else? This is so hard. Why did you ask this question?
Because it would be difficult. You don't have to answer. It's okay.
No, I'm going to give it a shot.
Because it's not a judgment call on quality, because you obviously love it all, and they're all
Is it just the TV show?
Just the TV show.
Then Paul McGann, because you only lose one thing, and potentially we could fold space time in such a way that someone still invents his Doctor, and he has the whole range of books and audios that are still about him. But that you lose the least stuff with him as well. So that's 8 and 9. That creates a weird gap.
But they fill themselves in.
But they fills itself in. Okay. Yeah. All right. So then I would say, it's so hard. needs to be a classic one, because otherwise I feel like I'm being mean to the new series. And they're all, look, they're all good in their way. Look, it's going to be, I'm going to have to say Colin Baker. I really like him too, but I feel like if you had to lose one era of the show where it's not doing too much that's interesting, or where it does try to do interesting things that don't quite work, that is the era to lose.
Who's the fancy one in the cricket vest?
That's Peter Davison. Okay. He's just before Colin Baker. Okay. So it would go, the new sequence, and it would reorder itself, but it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 10, 11, 12, 13.
All right.
Okay. Which I think is doable. I hate that question, though.
You're welcome.
That's awful. It's like, which one of your fingers would you like to cut off? None of them, please. They're
but
all
you
useful.
Pick three.
Yeah, I have to pick three. All right. Well, now we've tortured each other with questions. Yeah. Actually, I didn't torture you. I asked you a very nice question.
Yeah. And I was like, well, no.
But that's... good on you. Like, it's good audio to hear me squirm. I hope. I
Next
hope
time
so.
You can ask me a tough one.
All right. I will. I'll think of one.
Which seasons of Buffy would you remove?
No. I'll think of something worse than that.
There's nothing worse than that.
Yeah, sure there is.
Literally nothing in the world.
You could lose the first season easy. There's a lot of bad episodes in that first season.
Yeah, but there's a lot of, like, foundational
I mean, there's
stuff
also some really good ones.
That, like, that other stuff wouldn't be as good without.
You lose... I don't know. Yeah. Why are we deleting things? It's hard enough when things actually get deleted.
I think it's because I was thinking about the memory police and things going away.
That's fair.
So, like, I think your question led to my question.
Okay, that seems reasonable. All right. Why don't we answer some questions from our actual listeners and subscribers? Because they will hopefully have been much less mean to us than we are to each other.
It's true. They are much less mean than we are to each other.
Good.
This one's from Zoe. I recently ran a Monster of the Week powered by the apocalypse-style tabletop role-playing game, One Shot, based on the story of Feet of Clay. It went really, really well. Which Pratchett books do you all think would make for a good tabletop role-playing game, one-shots or campaign starts? I'm so sorry about my halting way of talking. Like, it's just because you have a nice conversational style and I can't pace myself. You know how people have, like, a cadence to their thing.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Look, you know, we have very different careers, Liz. And mine has mostly been based on talking to people and occasionally writing. And you're kind of the other way around. And I feel like we're meeting each other in the middle because I'm doing more and more writing as time goes on. And you're doing more and more speaking.
Like the Benjamin Button of jobs.
Yeah. So I feel like we're meeting in the middle.
So yeah. This
is a great question. Also, I love the idea of doing a Monster of the Week game based on Feet of Clay. Now, for those of you who don't know what Monster of the Week is, it is a tabletop role-playing game. So it's like Dungeons and Dragons, but it has its own set of rules that are geared towards emulating the style of a Monster of the Week TV show, like Supernatural or Buffy the Vampire Slayer or The X-Files. It's a great game. I've run it myself. I really like it. And it's run using a set of rules called Powered by the Apocalypse. And part of that game is that everybody chooses an archetype that suits the kind of story you're telling. And everyone has a different one. And then you have a set of special moves that your character can do, which when they come up in the fiction, you roll some dice to see how well that works. And it's great. It's a great game. Look it up. You can find a lot of stuff about it online. There's a lot of people playing it. I think Feet of Clay would work so well for that. That's genius. So what other ones do I think would work? I think Moving Pictures could be quite good.
Oh, yeah, because there's like that whole – yeah.
And I would probably run – you could run that as a Call of Cthulhu game with a bit of tweaks, which is a game based on the writings of H.P. Lovecraft. So that could be a good one. I think a lot of the Rincewind ones actually work quite well as adventures because they're much more – I mean, they draw on that kind of material. Like, obviously, a lot of the stuff in The Color of Magic fits in with that because there's quests to go on and stuff. Anything with Conan the Barbarian in it, that's a winner.
What about Eric?
Oh, Eric, yeah. Although it's weird because Eric doesn't really have a goal, like, except I want to be cool and being manipulated by demons.
That could be fun. Yeah,
it could be fun. That could be like a good one-shot game.
Yeah, try and be cool.
Yeah, try and be cool.
And the backdrop changes in the cool way. I don't know.
No, that's cool. I think as a campaign you could run one that is about, and again this would probably be quite Cthulhu-esque, you could run one about the things from the dungeon dimensions trying to break through into Ankh-Morpork, and then you could have them over the course of the campaign, they could try through the various avenues that crop up during the book, so through the moving pictures, through the rise of sorcery, through the soul music thing as well. Like, although it's not quite as much about that, but you could easily make it about that. So I think there's a lot of those things going on. Death going missing would be a great one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you could do that.
But you'd absolutely have to have appropriate snacks.
Yeah. I mean, that's where, I mean, the Discworld video game, the first one, is kind of based on, well, largely on Guards, actually, which would also make a good one. Because that's a mystery. And most of the Watch ones would make great ones because there's a mystery to solve. So that could be fun. Yeah, I think there's lots of them. A Watch campaign would be great. And in fact, this reminds me, there's another game called Primetime Adventures, which is designed to emulate whatever TV show you can think of. And one of the example ones that I've seen, someone wrote up their sessions of this so you could read about it, was they did it was called CSU Gotham, and it was like a CSI show, but it was CSU, so it was like a major crimes unit, and it was kind of like the TV show Gotham, actually, but they did this before that show came out. But the idea was that it was set during the time of Batman, but quite early in Batman's career. So you played, or the players were playing, police detectives in Gotham City solving crimes, and the crimes were getting a bit weirder. And in the background, there's these sightings of the Batman, and every now and then they'd find like some criminal who'd been like tied up and left for the police by Batman. And they're like, what is going on? And, but he'd only be in the background. I was like, that's cool. And so I think like that game, or any game that allows for that sort of procedural police drama, like a Gumshoe is another good system that you could use for that. Could be great to do a Watch series, much like the TV series. Like, I think that could make a good ongoing campaign. Yeah. So hopefully that answers the question, but I really want to hear more about this Feet of Clay game. I'm going to hit you up about that, Zoe. I want to know about it.
All right. And next question is from Melissa. Has anyone consciously put into practice something they've learned from The Witches or Rincewind, for example?
I feel like I have put in practice some of the things I've learned from The Witches.
None are coming to mind. I feel like it has to be true, but I guess in that way, it would be subconscious if it's not springing to mind for me.
I think, yeah.
Or I've just forgotten.
I feel like a lot of what I've learned is like understanding a bit about headology and how other people seek to manipulate you. And of course, Granny Weatherwax does it with the best of intentions, but not everybody does.
Mm.
So I think some of the things there, certainly a lot of my introduction to some of those psychological ideas came from reading about how Granny uses headology. So I feel like I've put that into practice in my life in that way.
Well, here's the thing I never thought I'd say. I think there's a lot to be learned from Rincewind because, like, you can get stuff done even if you really don't want to be there, or if it's terrifying you, or if you'd really rather be anywhere else but it needs to get done. Like, you know that you can do it.
Yeah.
Because, like, Rincewind can do it, and he absolutely is, like, he has no pride. He's happy to just run away or whatever, but he gets through some tough situations very well.
Yeah. And also the reverse, like you should never feel like you have to do something. If it really feels wrong to you, get out.
Yeah.
that's good life advice.
So I feel like maybe some of that has come through.
I'd run with that.
Well, Rincewind would run just constantly.
I think, you know, as we talked about in our very first episode, like the boots theory, Vimes's boots theory of economic unfairness, I feel like I've used that in my real life. I've used it to both to explain that to some people, but also to understand, you know, why, you know, yeah, just the idea of fiscal inequality.
That is a very good one. And I think it's become just so ingrained in my day-to-day thinking that I, to a degree, forgotten that it originally came from the book.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a very good one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that. If you've got some, we'd love to know what you have picked up from the books and used practically in your life, let us know. Now, I've got some questions from Stuart. Hello, Stuart, who sent us in a great long list at the start. So as we said last episode, we're going to try and answer one or two of his each episode until we get through them all. Here's a good one about the books and reading them. Did you stop reading Pratchett at any point, or have you been constantly reading and rereading since First Contact?
That's almost impossible for me to answer because, like, what is stop?
Well, did you know, was there a period when you didn't read any?
But as in, like, anytime you stop one is a period you're not reading one.
Well, yeah, but like, well,
so this is my pedantic nature that makes me bad at quizzes is coming through. Like, as in, I've never made a conscious decision to stop reading Terry Pratchett. Okay. I never thought I'm done. And I guess I've always felt that I would be reading and rereading them at different points in my life. It's just the gaps between books wax and wane depending on what else is happening.
Mm.
As I've said previously, like, I went through a really long period of time in university and high school where I think study and stress and all that got in the way of reading in general, and I didn't read much of anything at all. I just read the Harry Potter books on loop. Like, I just sort of finish it and start back at the beginning because it was just like a familiar soundtrack.
Mm.
And it was just sort of comfort reading that you could go into. I'd read lots of Terry Pratchett during high school. But there was a period of quite a few years where I hadn't read any of them. And then I'm pretty sure it was going postal that got me back into not just Terry Pratchett, but into reading in general.
Mm.
Because it was just so alive and vivid, and I'd forgotten what books could be like. So perhaps that period is like where I'd stopped, but not as a conscious decision, and it wasn't just Terry Pratchett. But I don't think I'm ever going to stop reading them, and I don't think there's been a period in the past where I've chosen to stop reading them.
Yeah, okay.
That, I think that answers the question.
Yeah, that makes sense. I kind of did stop, and it wasn't – I kind of fell off – a little bit like you were saying, I fell off the wagon of reading altogether for quite a while because I read a lot when I was younger. And when I started reading Pratchett, I was reading heaps and heaps and heaps and heaps. And I was working in a bookshop, as listeners will know because they've heard me talk about this before. But I started reading them at the start, and I read all the way up to the newest one to be published at that time, which I think was Interesting Times. And then I started buying them when they first came out. And for many years, and this was sort of in the late 90s, early 2000s, I would just buy each new one as it came out in hardcover. And then when I was a bit poorer, because I was, you know, not working in a full-time day job anymore, I started to wait until they came out in paperback. And then that sort of slowly degraded into me getting a couple of books behind. And one of the other things that happened is when the younger readers' books were coming out, I kind of overlooked those, which is a bit weird, really, when I consider that some of my favorite of his works are for middle grade readers. But I think when he started writing Discworld books for younger readers, I felt a bit disappointed at the time. And so I didn't read The Amazing Maurice when it came out, and I didn't read any of the Tiffany Aching ones, and still haven't read them, although I've collected them now so that I can read them for the podcast. But I kind of got behind and I stopped looking. And I think also he wasn't releasing one every year anymore. I think once we got to that stage. But I mean, I was still reading them pretty regularly up until I think I only got behind at around the time of Snuff. It was when I got really behind. I think I was one or two behind when Snuff came out, and then I caught up. And then I did read Unseen Academicals, but it was a year or two after it was published. And then I didn't catch up after that. I think I've got those in the right order, because Snuff before Unseen Academicals, after. It was around those two books anyway where I fell behind.
Yeah, I remember. I can't remember the order, but I remember standing in a bookstore. And I didn't know a new one was coming out, and I saw Unseen Academicals. I'm like, oh, cool, like there's like the new one out. And I remember standing in the bookstore for the longest time, like holding it, being like, do I have $50? Do I have $50 to spend on this book?
Yeah.
It was the hardcover. And I was like, no, I'm going to be, because I was a student, didn't have that as disposable income at the time. I was like, no, the responsible thing to do is to get it from the library. So I went on the waiting list for months and I finally got it, and it was great.
Yeah.
And there's a happy end to that story.
Yeah, good.
But yeah, I can remember that vividly, just standing in the store being like,
Yeah. Had you read any of them more than once before we started reading them again?
Yeah, going postal, I've read quite a few times.
Yeah, I hadn't read many of them more than once. So I'm not a big rereader. I've got a couple of books that I've read multiple times.
The Word, I think I've read a couple of times.
The Word?
Is it called The Word?
The Truth.
The Truth, yeah. I always get them confused because, like, William the Word.
The Word.
William the Truth.
Yeah. Like, it's just that also trips off the tongue. That's nice.
Yeah. But, yeah, so.
Okay. Yeah. No, I definitely reread Small Gods. I've read that at least twice. But very few of them have I read more than once or twice.
Nightwatch. I've read a couple of times.
Yeah, Nightwatch. Even Nightwatch, I've only read once. And I think it's just because when I was reading, there were so many books to read. I never felt like I had time to read a book that I'd already read. And now I actually am really enjoying it, particularly because there's been quite a gap. And the ones that, like, you know, the most recent one we've read for the podcast, which will come out after this episode, Equal Rights, I hadn't read for like 25 years. And rereading it was like, this is awesome. Like, I barely remember this.
Well, I know which ones I've reread because I didn't own very many of them. I got them from the library. So I think what would happen is, like, I would either get one through a quirk of like a gift or buying one at Christmas or something like that, and then I'd reread it because I owned it, or I would get one from the library that I loved and I'd save up and I'd buy it and reread it because I loved it. And then so yeah, I can see which ones I've reread by the small smattering of ones that I've owned for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I read Good Omens at least a couple of times as well. But again, like even the ones I reread, like I hadn't reread them recently.
Mm.
And I don't think I've read any of them more than two or three times.
I think it's pretty cool that two of our guests so far that we know of have Terry Pratchett-related Christmas traditions. Like Amy Gray watches Good Omens every year.
So does Jen, actually.
Yeah, so three of our guests.
Yeah.
And that was interesting because they were obviously on the same episode. And then Claire Coleman watches the Hogwatch movie.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe. Hogfather movie. Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, what am I doing? Where are my words? Where have they gone?
It's all right. This is the second podcast we've recorded in a day, just to draw back the curtain a little. Yeah. So we're all a bit...
But we had lunch in between.
We're book drunk. We're talk
drunk. Drunk on words.
Drunk on words. Drunk on consuming drunk on words and also drunk on making words.
Yeah.
I want to ask another one, and I'm interested in your answer. As creative people, how influential has Pratchett been on your work? And if there has been any influence, what form has it taken?
I think he showed me that there's more that you can do with sentences than you would have originally thought. Like you can play with like the power of fonts, the power of punctuation, power of capitalization. I hadn't really seen that in other books before. And you can express things in ways other than just blatantly words.
Yeah.
So I think he's widened my imagination on what is possible to do in writing. And it's just terms of, there's words that I've learned from him that I don't know if I'd know otherwise. I think perhaps he's maybe better at punning, I think.
Yeah.
Because it makes you think a certain way. So, yeah, I think showing that you can balance humor and commentary and also the way you can use language, I think that's probably the most succinct way to put it.
Yeah, cool.
There's definitely been an impact. And there was years ago, I used to just like straight up purposely quotes at the bottom of my email address and that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. I'd like to think that part of his comedic DNA has gone into how I write jokes. I know I'm flattering myself a bit there. I don't know how true that is, but I think he's definitely influenced my sense of humor, which means that, you know, what I find funny and what I write when I'm trying to write jokes is definitely influenced by him. And I think that comes across partly in I like things that are a little absurd. I like things that are descriptive. I mean, it's a broader sort of English style of comedy to use analogies for humor value and that sort of thing, you know, that very sort of Blackadder style, like, oh, you're as cunning as a fox who's just been made professor of cunning at Oxford University. You know, it's that sort of thing that I picked up from him, and how to do it in prose, which is interesting because I don't write prose. You know, I write dialogue mostly. I write scripts. I write for performance, and it's a slightly different thing. But I think that he writes such beautiful and amazing dialogue that, you know, when you see an adaptation of his work, they don't have to rework the dialogue very much. And that's because it's so good. And I like to think that someone did tell me once, and it was one of the nicest compliments that I got on my work, that I write good, very naturalistic dialogue, even when I'm writing comedy. And I know that it hasn't always been the case, and I had to work up to it. But I think that definitely is something that I've picked up from him, because a lot of the things that Discworld characters say, even when they're quite profound or quite artfully written, do sound like something that would actually come out of someone's mouth, as opposed to some of the dialogue you hear in badly written scripts where it's like no one talks like that. You never really feel that way with Pratchett. Even the really caricature characters who are, you know, written in a particular way to emphasize something, even if no one would literally talk that way, you can kind of imagine someone talking that way. So I'd like to think that's also an influence of his on me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's one last question I want to ask, and I want to ask it because it's kind of timely, because it refers to one of my other projects that I'm working on. I don't want to talk too much about it because it's, you know, you're not working on it, Liz.
It was interesting.
But I'm interested to know what your idea would be. Stuart asks that Splendid Chaps gave birth to the award-winning science fiction comedy series Night Terrace, which listeners of this subscriber-only podcast should go and purchase immediately if they've not already done so. I didn't make any of that up. Stuart actually wrote that. Thank you, Stuart. That's very nice of you to say. Nightterrace.com. But he asks, after giving this wonderful plug as a premise, what would the premise be for a Pratchett-inspired comedy series?
So Pratchett-inspired
comedy. Yeah, so a comedy series inspired by this podcast. Because for those not in the know, which could well be a lot of you, because most of you have come to Pratchett because you like Terry Pratchett. Night Terrace is a time travel comedy series about a woman who travels through space and time in a house that randomly travels through space and time. She doesn't really want to be doing that, but she's a ex-adventuring scientist, and now she's trying to retire, and she's grumpy. And so it's fun. So it's an audio series. It's like a sitcom, but just for your ears. And Liz, I can see you've got an idea. What is your premise?
Okay, so like I'm going to do a spaceship again because I always think that's an interesting thing. Because I always get like, so when I first watched Red Dwarf and he woke up and he was so far away from Earth, I was intensely stressed. Cause I'm like, you can't get back in a lifetime. You can't, like, how are they going to, what? And I always find that with space things. Like the stakes are always so high for me because I'm like, so many things can go wrong. It's unfamiliar. You're trapped. And like, it's like, you're stuck with people. So it would be a spaceship one. Except I think like a shorter term one, but in order to fuel the spaceship, you have to choose a thing to remove from the world.
Oh no. You've been inspired by this episode of this podcast.
And it's so meta. Wow. Like, can you imagine, like, okay, so you're sitting on your spaceship and you're like, okay, we need to travel to this thing. All right, how many? All right, we have to remove like 6 seasons of this or like one character from this. And you have to choose, like, what are you going to remove from the world of pop culture in order to return to the world, but make sure it's still a world you'd want to return to? And I also reminded, because like years ago, I don't know if you remember, I interviewed you for, was it Free Play when you were doing that?
Yeah.
And you were telling me about some of the games they had. And there was like a really interesting one that I think about quite a lot, where it was a computer game with, like, it was done as an experiment with real life stakes. Whereas if you lost the game, it would randomly delete one of the files from your computer.
Yes, I remember this. Yes.
So I feel like it ties in part to that as well. Like, you have to actually sacrifice some stuff. So like, obviously, the idea needs some finessing. I know that like it sounds like it's not a comedy, but it could be because like the way you'd handle it.
Yeah.
And you can balance comedy with stakes. So that's my suggestion.
Okay.
Like, we're on a spaceship where you can only move forward if you remove something from the world you're trying to get back to.
Wow. Okay. That sounds full on. I like it though.
Yeah. I'll probably write that as a film. So, you know.
That's good. Okay. All right. I won't do it. You can write that as
a film. We can write it
together.
That's
your idea. Maybe we should.
Yeah.
We haven't written anything together really, have we? That could be fun.
Yeah. I think that would actually be.
Do you like writing collaboratively?
I have done it a bit, like not as much as I don't know. I think is the answer to that.
I do, but it, like, there's different ways of doing it, and it can be quite.
Depends on if the other person sucks or not, I guess.
I'm feeling the pressure. It's a lot easier on an episodic thing because you can decide on the storyline together, but then give each other particular parts to write, which is how we do it on Night Terrace. This is such a good question, not just because it gives me a chance to talk about Night Terrace. I will say, like, there's a lot of sci-fi in audio drama because it's so much cheaper than doing sci-fi in any other medium, except maybe prose, which is, it doesn't cost you any more to do any medium, any genre in prose.
I mean, like, you have to, like, get a spaceship, grind it up into ink, and then...
I didn't know that's how it works.
That's how cartridges, like, you can only write about, like, you have to grind up the thing that you're writing about.
Oh.
If it's machinery, you don't have to grind up, like, animals and things like, but yeah, okay. If you want to, like, put in something specky, like a submarine or whatever, you got to get one.
Okay, right. I didn't know that. Yeah. I will remember that.
You don't have to get a special grinder. You can use a pasta machine.
I was getting, oh, good. Yeah. a Pratchett-inspired comedy series. I feel like, I mean, you could do one that's a bit meta. You could do one where it's a podcast. Actually, this is what I would do. I would do a scripted podcast. It's a narrative podcast. It's a comedy series, but it's presented as if it's a real podcast, but it's about the books of an author that doesn't exist.
Huh.
And so each episode, and you just invent the book and then you talk about it, explaining the plot and building up this crazy lore of this author's works that just are not real. And I'm kind of inspired here in part by a game that we invented at Pop-Up Playground called The Impossible Book Club, where that's exactly what we would do, is we'd just make up a book title and an author, and they were usually absurd jokes, and then everyone would discuss the book as if it was real, and each person would like make up something about the book that they really liked. And the basic, so it was basically like a just a very low-key, low-stakes, non-performative, chatty impro game.
Like an inverse of Ex Libris kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you made up something about the book, no one was allowed to say that's not true. They could say they disagreed with your opinion, but they couldn't say the thing you said was in the book was not in the book. Mm. And I think, yeah, you could have a lot of fun doing this sort of podcast, but scripting it and making it about books that don't actually exist.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if that might be too literal for you, Stuart, but I actually am really tickled by that idea now, and I kind of want to do it because you could quite directly invent this great sort of store of lore, and you could get guests in to come and talk about their favorite books in the series that don't exist, and oh, that could be a lot of fun.
Have you seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like the fake, like George R. R. Martin
character. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, you start to learn more and more about the world as they go.
And it's just so convoluted and has these ridiculous
Dragons
names.
Are boys.
Yeah, yeah, that was so weird. I liked that, though.
Yeah, sign Yon Patish.
Yeah. Now, I particularly wanted to ask that question because I was just going to sneak in a quick plug, because I think the day that this episode of the Ook Club comes out is going to be the same day that the Kickstarter for season 3 of Night Terrace starts. Now, you are already obviously supporting me and Liz financially, so I don't expect you to back it. But if you are interested in the things that we do, you may be interested in other things that we do. So, quick plug in there, just go to nightterrace.com, you'll find the link, or we'll tweet about it from the Pratchett Twitter. But yeah, you can support the production of another series of Night Terrace if that's something you'd like to do. And you can listen to episode 1 for free if you want to check it out. Liz, what are the projects are you working on at the moment? We never get to talk about this on the podcast.
I don't know. I'm just doing my usual sort of freelance stuff. So I've got articles coming out here and there, though I am very excited to have recently interviewed Dylan Moran, who is a huge hero of mine growing up.
Yeah.
I had a picture of him stuck in my school diary because I enjoyed his writing so much and it inspired me to get through a week of math tests. Every week, basically, I'd stick in something that brought me joy.
Yeah.
Which before Marie Kondo was the thing, or whatever. In fact, it's the opposite because I'm just adding stuff.
You're acquiring things because you think they'll give you joy.
Yeah.
Okay.
But every week I would in my school diary stick a picture of something that would make me glad to see it. And Dylan Moran was a regular one because I loved Black Books, I loved his stand-up work, and I loved the weird way his mind worked. And so it still works, as I got to find out firsthand. So I talked for a really long time about that. But I have an interview coming out, I think, in about a week's time.
That should be out by the time this goes live.
And it should be available online and things. But yeah, it was just a very cool conversation and I hope I did it justice because one thing I learned, even when I did a truncated transcript, because I do my own transcripts, I got 7,000 words worth of transcript and that was not writing everything down, and I only got 2,000 words worth of content, and you have to also set the scene. So it's just a very small percentage of what happened.
It's a very difficult job.
Yeah, and you got to choose how to represent it. And also people sound different when it's reading their words rather than hearing their words because there's a musical quality to things. And especially performers, tone of voice, the expression, all of that kind of thing factors in. Just listening to the tape was different to being in the room. And I always worry about writing down something if you're doing justice to the way someone spoke the words or if you're misrepresenting them, even though you're writing down the words verbatim. You have to paint the context around it. Anyway, that's a mini lecture into writing an article that you didn't ask for.
But. No, but I find it really interesting because, I was saying before that it's a bit of a knack to learn to write natural sounding dialogue. But the thing is, natural sounding dialogue does not sound like what real people speak like, because we're always editing what other people say in our heads and summarizing it into the sensible part. Whereas we all we mispronounce words, we say words in a slightly weird order, we put pauses where they don't really make sense. We do all of those things and I don't think anything gives you a better appreciation for that than two things, one of which is interviewing someone and then having to transcribe it into prose, and the other one is recording a podcast or any kind of conversation and then listening to it back. And I mean, again, I'm drawing back the curtain a little bit, but hey, that's probably why you want to listen to this podcast. I do a lot of editing on Pratchett to make us sound a bit, not smarter, but to just make it a bit more presentable.
Yeah, because there's less ums and ahs.
You take out the ums and ahs, you take out the pauses, you don't take out too many because you want it to sound natural, but you do. That's how you make it sound great.
Yeah, and transcribing things, people go halfway through a sentence and then they start their second sentence and it doesn't quite make one sentence together, and you have to be how do I represent this idea without monstering their words?
Yeah. I mean, I did an interview, quite a long interview, for a fan publication once. And they recorded it and then they printed it verbatim.
Oh, someone did that to me it was the worst thing. I'm like, what did I do to you to deserve this?
I was reading it back going, I sound like an idiot.
How dare you quote me directly?
I know. And I felt really bad. And I got over it because I'm like, they're not getting paid for this. They don't have time to edit my words and make it sound good. But at the same time, if I'd known that that was how it was going to be presented, I would have – taken my time with the answers a bit more so that I sounded better in print.
If I know that I'm going to be in verbatim, I'd rather do written responses, like an email back and forth as
well.
That
would be better, I agree, because then you have control over what it looks like in print.
Yeah, how you sound and how you write are different.
Yeah, they really are. And look, that might be a good note to leave on.
Hmm.
We hope you've enjoyed this. We hope you do the quiz. We'll send you we won't send you a link. Well, we could, I guess.
Yeah.
It'll be in the show notes for the podcast anyway.
If you have access to a better one.
Please tell us.
We would not hate seeing it. I was shocked, really, to not find a plethora of – which I thought the problem was going to be choosing the best of a strong field rather than not being able to find one at all.
It turns out, there just weren't any good ones.
There's too many characters.
Yeah. And look, we probably don't want to do a quiz for the next episode of the Oot Club. So if you've got something you'd like us to do that you think would be fun, please let us know. We would love to hear from you. You can send us an email at chat@pratchettpodcast.com, or you can get on the Discord if you're giving us $5 or more a month and ask us there, or let us know, or just get in touch via social media. But let us know what you want to hear on the Oot Club. This podcast is for you, and we want to do stuff that we think you would like to hear.
Otherwise, next time, I'm just going to bring a whole bunch of Doctor Who books and make Benton burn them one by one.
No! You monster!
You get to keep one page from each. Do you choose to destroy the whole thing or save one page?
Oh, I hate this so much.
I wouldn't let you burn books. That's okay.
That's it.
I'm just trying to think of the worst.
I'm going.
Thing.
I'm getting out. I'm leaving. I'm leaving, Liz.
Come back.
No.
No, we've got. All right, he's gone. We can finally talk about it. No. Thank you for tuning in.